So it's legal now up there in Canada, eh, Stephen?
Sure is. Went into effect this week. It's about time. I think a lot of people are going to benefit from it.
So have you done it yet?
No.
Really? Why wouldn't you?
Well, it's not like I'm required to do it just because it's legal now, Chris.
Oh, come on, Stephen. You of all people should be. You're always just so stressed.
I just don't get why I would. I'm so used to not doing it, I just don't see what the point would be to start now. Besides, is it even safe?
Oh, come on.
Wait, Chris, hold it. I got this. Stephen, you and I have done, what, about 150 episodes of Better Podcasting? We've also done more or less a couple hundred Gonna Geek shows. Just think of how many hours you've wasted editing your errors because your mind has been elsewhere. Don't you think that editor, Stephen, would just like to let some of that go?
You do raise a good point. It would be awesome to get that time back. I could spend that time doing better things like looking at myself in the mirror or just telling myself how awesome I am. Okay, fine. You convinced me. I'll do it.
Now we're talking.
I'll take full advantage of the new law that says I can now legally leave my pet moose unattended for more than an hour. Besides, it's always so hard to keep her quiet during the recording.
I'm Josh Liston from On the Bubble Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is the official GunnaGeek.com show. Here we're a bunch of geeks talking about geeky things. Each week, we run down the latest news and happenings in the world of geek. These are your hosts for the show, Steven.
But what if I'm in the mood for a T-Swift story?
Chris.
I've heard the X is going to give it to you.
And SP.
That's how we roll on Gunna Geek on Monday night. We get crazy!
Gunna Geek Productions presents the official GunnaGeek.com show.
Welcome to an all-new episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. I am Stephen John Drew, and joining me, of course, is Chris Farrell.
Stephen, I'm pretty jealous of the fact that you've got a moose and I don't.
I do have a moose. I have a moose on a loose, and his name is Stargate Pioneer.
Hey, guys, how's it going? Had a great weekend. Actually fixed a bathroom faucet, and I'm ready to go.
Well, that means that you are ready for an all-new episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. If this is the first time checking out our show, thank you very much for doing that. We appreciate that. It's always great to have new people listen to the show. If you like to check us out through wherever you want, I'm pleased to say we are in Spotify now. We've been in there for a couple of weeks. So if you are looking for us in Spotify, you can find us there. Although my personal recommendation, of course, is to just like look for SP on the street. That's the best place to find us.
Never know when you're going to spot an SP out in the wild.
He actually memorizes every single episode that we do. So you just be like, hey, SP, I want to listen to episode 148. And he'll recite the entire thing, all parts.
The joke's on you, though, because he's on the secret moon base that NASA has. You're probably not going to find him very easily.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to the news. Here we go. All right, I'll kick off the news. We'll go ahead and talk about something that's super exciting for like everybody, right? We're talking, of course, about a foldable phone/tablet. This has been rumored for a little while that there was maybe some development being had by the one and only Samsung to make a foldable display. And the rumors appear to have been true because Samsung Mobile Division CEO DJ Kaw said that the feature of its folding Galaxy F will be that it's essentially two devices in one. It's going to be a 4.6-inch phone, but when unfolded, will be a 7.3-inch tablet. And of course, they're comparing that to some of the screen sizes in the Galaxy Tab lineup. This is apparently going to be released globally, but they have not said how much this is going to scale, on what level this device will be available, but they're just going to take the old wait and see mentality on the foldable phone. Ah, Chris Farrell, I want to ask you first, what's your thoughts on this?
It's not going to be cheap. This is going to be one of those short run things that is going to have an expensive price tag to prove this proof of concept, and something is something that people are interested in. Do I think the tech is cool? Yeah, I think it's kind of cool, but for me, it's price prohibitive. If this is a luxury tax basically on top of what the traditional Samsung phone prices are, I'm out. I don't care how cool it is. I'm not paying a luxury tax to have a foldable phone again.
Yeah, I got to say that when I first heard about this here, the foldable phone thing, the first person that came to my mind is our resident viewer who's here most Mondays, Albert Sims. Albert Sims, for those of you who have not checked out the live stream before, Albert Sims, he is a regular watcher during our live recording on Mondays, and he prides himself on the fact that he has a standard non-smart flip phone. So, Albert Sims, you were ahead of the curve on this one. High five.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Stargate Pioneer, are you going to get the foldable phone?
The idea has merit, because right now, most of the time at home or when I'm out, I have my phone with me, which is an iPhone 8 Plus, and I have my iPad Mini, which I use to fly my drones and do other stuff like read websites and stuff like that. So if I could have a phone the size of an iPhone 8 Plus or an SX Max, you know, the phablet size, but then I'm able to fold it out so that it is more like the iPad Mini size, then I'm golden. And I could merge those two devices into one. And Apple, for its part, has not updated the iPad Mini since the iPad Mini 4, I think a couple of years ago. I think they're going to discontinue the line. So if they could do something that's bigger than the phablet, but yet smaller than an actual tablet, then I think I would definitely be bought in on something like that. So maybe I'm a small use case, but I definitely see merit in it.
I will sort of hold on for my opinion right now, because I could potentially see the merit, but I don't picture it being easy to carry around. That's the hurdle that I can't get over. I have a feeling this is not going to be something that you're going to want very often folded. I don't see it. I don't see how it's going to be possible to make it condensed.
Did you ever have a flip phone when you were younger?
Yes, but I also didn't have a display that needs to fold on that hinge.
Yeah, but if you start looking at some of the older flip phones that are out there, not necessarily like the Moto Razr level of thickness, but like I had what was a Motorola V, I don't even remember what it was, but a generic just flip phone, it's probably going to be thinner than what most of the flip phones were of that era.
So I'm looking at some of the concept pictures right now, and it's not like it doesn't have a good hinge on it. It's just this big, huge loop that goes around, which isn't bad. I mean, a foldable screen, oh my gosh, think of the applications there beyond just the foldable phone. But in just the foldable phone, I get what you're saying. I mean, it would be good, like if you had some sort of a satchel or a purse where you could throw it in and condense it a little bit, but I don't even know if I would do it then. Maybe you could protect the screen with the back of the phone itself in that configuration. I think that has some merit. So there are some benefits here. I agree. It looks like it's not going to be that compact. It's not going to fit like the old foldable phones that we remember from 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely. In any case, we'll see what happens. And that's the stance I'm going to take. I will wait. And whatever happens with it, I will say that I predicted.
I'm just going to wait for Google to make their version of it, because then I can get real Android, not Samsung Droid.
That's true. That's very, very true. All right, well, moving on in the news here, you said that you like some buds, right? Is that right, Chris? You like buds?
I don't. The Google Pixel Buds, though, I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. It was Google's attempt to combat Apple's AirPods. They were basically Bluetooth headphones, but in this case, they had a neck strap around them that did pretty much all the same things. You could access Google Assistant, much like the AirPods could access Siri. would allow you to control tracks, control volume by touch, things like that. It was basically just their attempt to do Bluetooth headphones, and it met with mixed results. But one of the coolest things that was shown on it last year at the Pixel 2 event was the fact that they were going to have real-time translation tools built into it. Do you guys remember the Google Translation stuff from last year when we talked about it?
Yeah, I do. And I got to say, by the way, on the whole Google Translate front, I have found that the app is odd now compared to how it was. And I don't know if that's a push to sort of start using the actual things like the Pixel Buds and whatnot, but I used to actually be able to easily go into the Google Translate app and do a live listen and whatnot, and it hasn't been working the same way that it used to. So I something's changed in there, but I'm getting us off topic. I apologize.
It's possible that it has. Now, for those that aren't familiar, the Google Translate tool with the Pixel Buds was basically supposed to be real-time translation. So if I was talking to Steven, he was speaking to me in, say, Spanish, and I had my Pixel Bud in, it would translate real-time what he was saying to English so that I could understand. I could speak back, and then my phone would translate out the speaker to him, the English to Spanish comments back. Well, what was interesting during the Pixel 2 event is this was announced as a Pixel-only capability. You had to have a Pixel 1 or a Pixel 2 to be able to do this. Well, the folks over at Droid Life were on some of the Pixel Buds support pages yesterday, and it has now been updated instead of saying only on available Pixel phones to say that Google Translate is available on all assistant-optimized headphones and Android phones. So yes, they have moved away from forcing you to be on a Pixel phone. Now, how does it work? You have to have headphones or buds that are optimized to work with Google Assistant. There's a few that are out there right now. Google has their USB-C buds that are coming with the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL, which I believe are available to purchase on their website. Bose and Sony also have assistant-optimized headphones. And there's probably a couple other companies that do. LG also. Now, if you have any of these headphones that are assistant optimized, you can make use of the Google Translate tools on here. So they're opening up the customer base. So instead of just being locked down to the small base was to have Pixel phones, it's becoming more and more practical for someone to use this if they're on travel somewhere, or if they're going on vacation to a country where they don't speak the language. These Google tools can be pretty helpful to help you figure out what's going on. And this isn't unheard of, people doing that. I was watching one of Justin Robert Young's live podcasts when he got back from Japan, and he said, I don't speak a lick of Japanese. He goes, I relied on people either knowing some English or Google Translate, translating what I was wanting so that they could understand it back and forth, and also using the camera functions to look at like Japanese characters and translate it to English. So this is not unheard of. Google's trying to do this little tweak now to make it so that it's easier to do real-time translation services, and I'm happy they've opened it up beyond the Pixel side of the house and possibly made it so more and more people can use it. This is one of those great tools that Google has that just not a lot of people could use. What do you guys think? Is this something you would try if you were on the road?
I'm wondering what their... Yeah, first of all, yes, Chris, I would definitely try this if I was on the road in a foreign country. I don't speak that many languages, so I'm definitely going to need some help. And even the ones that I do speak, I need help with. But I'm wondering what their sustainability is with this, what their ability to make money off of this or to monetize this. I'm wondering that, because that's going to say how long that this capability is actually going to be out there.
That's a good question.
I think it's continued driving people towards using Google Assistant services and things like that. And I don't know whether these headphone manufacturers have to pay some kind of licensing fee to be considered assistant optimized. I would have to go and look that up. But this basically is just to further entrench you in the Google ecosystem is my take on it.
You know, I guess I didn't think about that, the whole added value thing to the Android system. The other thing, though, that I think when we've looked at Google before is they have offered products and things that they aren't directly making money off, but that you know they're doing something with it. And I think Google Translate itself, because wasn't that Babel Fish or whatever the heck that was, right? Like, wasn't that something they bought? And so it's the same sort of idea, and they've got that. So I don't know. There must be some reason that they feel that this is worth putting time and money in. In any case, I'm happy that they've opened this to more than just Pixels. I think that this is definitely something that a lot of people could use, and maybe it will be something that can go ahead and entice some more people to check out Android, because we all know that it's superior than Apple.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, but the key is this is open to all Android phones so long as you have assistant optimized headphones that you're connecting with, be it over Bluetooth or USB-C.
So let me ask you this then, Chris Farrell.
Ask away, sir.
Are you going to be able to translate American to Canadian and Canadian to American?
French Canadian, probably.
Well, we'll see what happens here with this. And in any case, I do really, really, really hope that you buy a pair of these and review them on this show.
I'm not buying the Pixel Buds. They're trash. I'd consider the USB-C version of them that's out because that's probably only like $30, but I don't need more headphones right now.
So what you're saying is that you failed the world. Okay, that's fair.
I didn't fail the world. Google failed the world in making uncomfortable earbuds.
Okay, we heard it here first. Chris doesn't care about you, listener and viewer. That's what he said.
I wouldn't mind a pair of the Bose QC35-2s, though. Those are some sweet headphones.
You know what else you wouldn't mind is a 2019 GMC Sierra 4x4.
Crew crab.
All right, so tell me a little bit about what failed this week in space. I hear you broke something else, SP.
I had nothing to do with it. It was the Soyuz rocket launch MS-10 that failed last week on its attempt to carry two astronauts to the International Space Station. So I read a bunch of articles and I have a lot of knowledge here. We're going to go through some of this. So during the Thursday, October 11th, 2018, MS-10 Soyuz manned launch attempt, at approximately 1 minute 52 seconds after liftoff, you can actually visually see a wobble of the rocket plume, you know, that cloud that comes out behind the rocket with the spent rocket fuel. And at approximately 2 minutes after liftoff, and according to Roscosmos, it's 119 seconds, the Soyuz escape tower automatically activated and it separated the capsule from the remaining rocket body and forcing the occupants into a ballistic re-entering and aborting the launch. So astronaut Nick Hague and cosmonaut Alexei Ovchinin took about 30 minutes at that point in time to safely parachute back to the Earth's surface from an altitude of around 30 miles. They experienced 6.7 Gs during the maneuver and landed about 12 miles east of Deskazigan, which is in Kazakhstan. Now, the Gs, or gravity forces, the crew's face was actually far less than the previous Soyuz failure in 1975, where cosmonauts suffered over 21 Gs, or gravity forces. The only other Soyuz failure was in 1983, which was a launch pad engine failure in which the cosmonauts missed catastrophic failure by mere seconds after a booster caught on fire on the pad.
So you're saying up until this most recent Soyuz accident, the last one was before I was even alive. That's what you're saying.
You weren't born in 1983?
I was not born in 1983.
Oh my gosh, I'm old. Thank you, Chris. You just did that to say how old I was.
I don't know what you're talking about. I would never do such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Steven probably wasn't alive either.
I was alive in spirit.
All right, guys. Now, the cause of the October 11, 2018 incident has been initially attributed to a faulty rocket booster separation. The result was contact with the first stage. And in the process of the contact with the first stage, it also damaged the second stage booster, and that initiated the abort sequence. Now, the failed launch comes on the heel of a loss of International Space Station pressure in 2018 in August due to a leak in the Soyuz capsule hull that is currently attached to the station. The leak has been repaired, and the three current ISS residents were planning on returning to Earth in that capsule around the late December timeframe. Now, the crew members on the ISS actually had a bird's eye view of the aborted launch and even snapped some amazing photos of the launch and the abort event in progress. Now, current plans for the ISS are on hold as the Russians investigate the failure. The Soyuz fleet was immediately grounded following the October 11, 2018 incident and is pending the results of the investigations. The Russians have targeted an October 20th date for their initial report. Possibilities have been floated for the current ISS crew that include remaining on board for longer or even abandoning the station. The current crew has plenty of supplies and is expecting a pair of unmanned resupply missions in the coming months delivered via Russian Progress and SpaceX Dragon systems. The Americans have been paying the Russians about $82 million per seat for the astronauts to make it into space on their ride up to the ISS. As we know, the United States of America is currently without a way to carry humans into space, and we've been covering that here on Gonna Geek for the past couple of years. Boeing CST-100 Starliner is expected to make a manned flight to the ISS in August 2019 timeframe, while SpaceX's Dragon could occur in the June 2019 timeframe. And SpaceX has said it could move up its timetable depending on NASA's needs. Now, Roscosmos, which is the Russian space agency, and NASA were very prolific about information regarding both the Soyuz and ISS crew during and post-event. There were a lot of pictures and video of Haig and Ovchinnikov as they went through their post-event recovery and ultimate trip to Moscow, where they trained for the launch mission. Now, my personal congratulations and admiration go out to NASA spokesperson Brandy Dean for her tremendous and professional live commentary, which was ongoing throughout the event. She immediately, factually, and continuously reported on the events of the launch and the abort, transitioning expertly from normal launch mode to abort and recovery mode. Guys, if you haven't seen this video, it's amazing. You actually see the astronaut and the cosmonaut while the event is going. The camera was inside the cabin during the abort event. Now, it quickly went out of the cabin, but you saw in real time what was going on. And Brandy Dean was the NASA spokesperson. There was also a Roscosmos that you could hear in the background, but if you didn't know Russian, you wouldn't be able to tell what was going on. So Brandy really did a great job, and my hat is off to them, and also to Roscosmos, because they got to the crew immediately. It took a half an hour for this crew to come down, but they had already pre-positioned assets for the normal recovery. And this is in case anything happens during a manned launch or a crewed launch. And they were able to immediately get to the crew upon their return to Earth. And they did some initial checks. They then brought them back to Baikonur, and then they flew them and whatever family was with them to Moscow, which is where they actually train for these missions and where they're stationed. So this all went off without a hitch after the failure in the rocket body. And to the date now with Soyuz, they haven't lost an individual. So the safety measures actually worked. And we actually talked about the safety measures in an event like this a couple of weeks ago on Gonna Geek for the Starliner and the SpaceX Dragon manned versions. So this is all very important, guys. Right now, we have no way to get up to the ISS, and we are closer than ever for the United States to actually have some capabilities to do it. But right now, the Russians are grounded.
That's crazy. I got to say that when I heard about this, I just had to start going down the Google rabbit hole of everything to do with this. And some of the imagery and videos that came out of that are absolutely jaw-dropping. It's amazing that this happened as it did, because it could have gone a whole other way.
Yeah, it could have gone real bad.
This was broadcast live on NASA TV, and they have not taken down any videos of the event. They have been very forthcoming, and I think Roscosmos has also been very forthcoming as well. I mean, to state what they thought was the initial failure as early as they did, when the astronaut and cosmonaut were still on their way down, I mean, just moments after the event occurred, I think that was phenomenal. And you can hear them talking. They have instantly, don't mistake what happened. They instantly transitioned from, this is a normal nominal flight. And matter of fact, Brandy said, everything's fine. And then boom, the event happened. And she immediately said I forget her exact words, but the abort tower has activated. And then she went immediately into, everything is fine. Everything is nominal. And the astronaut and cosmonaut are okay. And she wasn't like a running commentary either. It was just a normal launch commentary. So if you have a few minutes, the NASA video that I found is 6 minutes long. I've actually seen many of them, but the 6 minute long video is probably about the best out there that is. So you can get that at geeks.link/10failure, and 10 is spelled out T-E-N. So 10 failure. And it's an amazing view, and you can see how dangerous space travel still is yet today.
Yeah. I am looking forward to the day that we've got a few extra companies in the running for getting people up there and whatnot, because I think that this sort of thing highlights that it's not a good thing when we've got dependency on just basically one country or one party, right? Like, to get up and down. Like, I know you said that there's supplies and other things coming. It's all fine for the people who are up there, but I think that it'll be good to diversify our portfolio as the world.
True. And of course, there are other countries that are investigating manned flight. China obviously has capability as well. It's not as robust as everything else out there right now. Well, the Russians, I guess. but there are other people that are looking into it, other countries that are looking into it. And this is a big deal right now. I don't want to understate that. But guys, let me ask you this. So you're on the International Space Station. They timed the launch, so it's happening as the space station is going over the launch site. You're actually viewing what you think are your new bunkmates that are coming up, and you're taking pictures so you can show them later. Hey, this was you. You're way out there. And all of a sudden, you're hearing it. They weren't obscuring anything from them. They didn't lie to them. They didn't not tell them what was going on. The International Space Station crew knew what was going on, and they were taking pictures. And so you're taking pictures in an event in progress. You have no idea if those people in there are alive or not. Just think about that, and think about, oh, I just did that a couple of months ago and I have to go back down. Think about what that does to your mind.
Yeah, that's messed up.
It's trippy.
Yeah. The only good thought that you might have, though, is, sweet, I get to keep my pants off for a while longer, because, you know, it's like you have company over, right? You put your pants on for a couple of days and then the pants come off later, right? So, you know, that's...
They might actually have to take their pants off to make them last a little bit longer now.
Well, I'm glad to see this did work out. And again, that link is geeks.link/10failure. That's T-E-N failure. And this time it's not about Windows 10. This time it's not about Windows 10.
MS-10, though.
All right, well, moving on to our extra section here, let's talk briefly about a Google event that happened last week. Chris Farrell, did you hear about this Google event?
You mean what didn't leak ahead of time from the Google event?
Exactly. And that's what we're talking about here, is the fact that, apparently the Google Pixel event that they had last week, there's nothing new, really. Everything, as we mentioned last week, everything that leaked ahead of time we anticipated would be valid, and that there wouldn't be any real surprises, and there weren't. The only things that were sort of interesting were out of the software side of things. So if you were interested in some of the software features that are available under a Google Pixel phone, because remember, Google is running the proper stock Android, and they have made some own tweaks and whatnot to, like, the software processing and whatnot that's available for the Pixel cameras and whatnot. That's really the highlights from this past week's new Pixel event. The Pixel 3 XL looks kind of ugly with the notch. The Pixel regular size, Pixel 3 regular, I think actually looks pretty nice, but there's really not much new. The wireless charging is a thing now, finally. I don't know why it took them so long to get back to that.
Yeah, that's the key, to get back to it.
The Nexus originally had it. Like, my Nexus had it. I don't get why they...
The Nexus 4 and the Nexus 5 both had wireless charging back in the day.
So there's not much new. If you want to check that out, email us or tweet us or whatever. We'll appease you and act interested, because it's really...
That sounds so excited, Stephen. Jeez.
I'm a bit underwhelmed over what Google actually announced or has set out for their devices for the next year. And I would like more, but I did take a look at the price point. The price point is there. It just needs a little bit more storage on board. So maybe they'll get better next year.
The storage, the reason why they've gone low storage is because they're really pushing the whole cloud thing. Like, they give people free cloud and whatnot. And I admit I use it. I don't know what's on my phone and what is not. And it works really well, because most of the pictures are, or a lot of the pictures are, cached in a smaller version on your phone. But I think from a brandability perspective, I would definitely like to see them increase that, because I think a lot of people probably go, well, I need 256, not realizing that people like Chris and I aren't even using half of our 64 gig.
Exactly. I mean, the cool stuff that came out this time, it wasn't the new hardware. Hardware was fine. We already heard about it. It's some of the stuff that's coming in software. And Steven has a couple of points he was going to bring up. I see in the show notes. The one I wanted to bring up was basically their call screening tool that's coming to Google Assistant for all of the Pixel phones. And what that basically is if a phone number calls you and you pop up and don't recognize it, you can have Google Assistant screen the call for you, meaning you hit a button, Google Assistant's going to pick up. It's going to say, hey, you've reached the Google Assistant. This is Chris Farrell's phone. And it's going to screen the call and see who is calling you and what it's about. And after that, you can make a determination whether you want to answer it or not. That is really cool. And it's going to show up as real-time text on your phone as it talks to this number you don't recognize. So if it's legit, you can see their response back to Google Assistant, be like, hey, I want to take that call, and pick up the phone and go. If it's spam, you can just tell it to hang up. I think that is pretty cool.
Especially because I'm using it on you every time you call me, Chris.
So that's why I've gotten 3 spam calls today.
Sorry, this user cannot be reached.
Yeah,
that's all it's going to say to you.
If you get a chance, go check out the demo they have of that on YouTube. It's pretty cool, actually. And this is not like their other service they announced last year, which was basically going to do reservations and stuff for you. That sounded like a person. This is the Google Assistant. So it's not natural speak. It's the slightly robotic speak that we get. But still, really cool. I don't have to screen my own calls now. Instead of just hanging up or be like, oh, they'll leave a voicemail, I can find out if it's, you know, actually important, like the car dealership saying my car is fixed and I should pick it up and I just had the wrong number in there. I'm excited. I like this feature.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're going to use it to screen calls, not use it as an excuse. Yeah. Oh, sorry, hon. I must have accidentally hit the screen button. My apologies. I accidentally did that.
Oops.
The other feature that I thought was interesting, and I don't know that I buy it yet, but they are making a change with the night photography on the Pixel cameras. And apparently this is going to roll out to all the Pixel cameras. So allegedly a massive, massive increase in what you get when you're taking pictures in low light. Like the example they showed almost made it look like daytime. I don't believe it till I see it. I've seen a lot of these low light processing things fall apart, but I would love it if I could do that, because you know, low light, it happens a lot, especially this time of year. You head out of work and sure enough it's evening, it's dusk already. So definitely I would love to see this improvement.
I had an opportunity to take a picture in low light with my iPhone 8 Plus, but using the DJI Osmo mobile, and it has different modes for low light, and actually the low light on the DJI mobile it's phenomenal, the quality of picture that it can take once you set it on the right setting.
The examples they showed of it, granted these are going to be the best world examples, were really good in this, but what's really interesting on it is, remember, Google, arguably the Pixel 2 camera was the best in breed last year on phone cameras. Pixel 3 cameras looking to shape up that way. Everyone's going like these multiple lens setups, do depth sensing and things like that. Google's banking on the software, on machine learning and things like that to make their pictures look good. So this just follows down that path they already have, which is we don't need to put in these super complicated camera setups. It's we can put a solid camera in there and then use software that's optimized for it to give you the best picture possible. And it's working. If they can pull off even half of what they showed off of their low light feature, it's really impressive. I'm really curious to see what happens with that. Now, that being said, how often am I going to use it? Not much. I mean, I don't use my camera a ton on my phone, but for other people who have small kids or something like that, where the camera phone is the easiest thing, just to double click a button and have it ready to go. It's nice because you don't have to worry about, oh, did I get the right picture? You can start to trust the fact that the software is going to make sure you get the best version.
Yeah. The other thing that's worth note, which actually came out this week, so not exactly related to that event, is that apparently Google is going to enable the camera app available for the various Pixels to record audio using external microphones. Now this is going to drop on the 18th. I actually wanted to put this in the extra because I didn't realize that it wasn't possible to use an external mic with the camera.
Neither did I. So, I had no clue.
No, it's a good reason, right? You know, there are different devices that a lot of these cheap gimmicky cell phone hookup things, especially with like USB-C and whatnot, you can see that that's going to be a craze at some point or another, that they'll all of a sudden you'll have people with their stupid shotgun microphones going around with their phone and whatnot. And they won't be good shotgun mics. They'll be garbage, just like all the other cheap accessories. But anyways, I just wanted
Tell
to mention that.
Tell us how you really feel, Steven. Tell us how you really feel.
I'm sick of the stupid attachments that every marketing company is giving out for all of these cell phones. They're like, oh, look, you can have these lenses. Oh, wait, it just makes it look smudgy. So anyways, it just frustrates me. And finally, in our extra extra here, we've got this is actually really interesting for Adobe users. For those of you not familiar, Adobe creates a whole bunch of awesome creative products, and one of them, which is Photoshop. And Photoshop has been the standard for photo editing. Like, it's everybody says, I could go Photoshop that, even though they're just using some crappy app. That's what it's a term now. I'm gonna Photoshop that. Well, here's the thing. They've been behind the curve as far as mobile and tablet devices go. They've not done a very good job of executing this on iOS especially. And let's be real, out of tablets, iPads are the de facto standard. Well, there's been some companies that have definitely capitalized on the shortcomings. For example, Affinity Photo. I think they ended up a brief time last year getting App of the Year or something like that because they made a really good comparable product available for iOS. Well, they have announced that there is a full desktop class version of Photoshop coming to iOS. And so I think that's really interesting because that is going to open things up a lot for people who are using this. There's a lot of probably creative directors and things like that that are going to love being able to just have that right on a tablet. And yes, it's a niche market for that, but I think that that's going to be an interesting possible turn in the way of Adobe's future. Chris Farrell, will you use this?
No, but I'm not a huge Photoshop person. I take photos and I do very minor tweaks. The extent of my Photoshop usage is on my computer to basically make backgrounds in OBS for podcasts and stuff like that. That's really what I use it for, and I don't care enough to try and figure that out on my iPad.
Okay, fair enough. Stargate Pioneer, though, you'll use this all the time to Photoshop yourself into the Earth, right? Because we all know you're out in space right now, so you're going to use this so you can take a couple selfies.
No, I'm not out in space. I'm just on the other side of the flat Earth.
fair enough. Okay.
Well, I use this, I don't know, it depends on how expensive it is. Fortunately, Photoshop is notorious for being very expensive. I believe, I haven't looked at it in a while, but I believe if you just get Photoshop, it's like $20 a month. And if you get their entire suite, it's like $50 or $80 a month or something like that. That's a lot of money for something that I might use occasionally. And because I'm not a power user of any photo editing software, and if it's too expensive, I won't do it. But if they do have like a special app that is relatively low cost, I would say like $10 or less. And then if they had a $2 a month subscription or something like that, just for the iPad version, I might consider it.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, because actually the photography version of Adobe, which is what I used to have, is $9.99 US a month. And that's if you pay annual, and that gives you Lightroom as well as Photoshop. It will be interesting to see if this is going to be a separate product or be included in there, because if it's $9.99 a month and you get Lightroom, Photoshop desktop, and Photoshop iOS, that might be more valuable to some people. But for me, still, Affinity Photo works great for me. So yes, it has some shortcomings, but it does what I need to do at this time, and I don't have to pay annually. But in any case, I thought it was worth a mention. But let's go ahead and move on to Steven's geeky stuff. But before we get there, I want to remind everybody we're part of the Gunna Geek Network. The Gunna Geek Network has a bunch of amazing geeky podcasts on there. If you haven't checked it out, I encourage you to head on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. I have a lot of awesome members on the Gunna Geek Network. They're all individual podcasts, and they all just want to be on the network to have fun. And so if you haven't checked it out, we encourage you to do so. GunnaGeekNetwork.com. We've even got one called the Starling Tribune. We've got one called Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we even have one called Chris Farrell's Bald Podcast with Chris Farrell, the Bald Podcaster.
That is true. I talk about all the different waxes I use on my dome. Mr. Clean taught me.
Seriously, check that out at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And again, a lot of amazing geeky podcasts. And if you have a geeky podcast and you think that you want to be a part of the network, head to GunnaGeekNetwork.com/join. And please submit your application. You're just GunnaGeekNetwork.com and you'll see it there. Don't put /join. It'll mess up. But let's go ahead and move on to Steven's geeky stuff. Here we go. All right, it's well overdue. We can blame Chris Farrell for this one.
Most people do.
I, as I've alluded to on the show, have a lot of smart products, and Chris Farrell did start it. He came on here once, and I think he talked about his Wink Hub. I think that was how it all started, and I got envious of what he could do.
Yep.
Then
you're hooked.
Exactly. I am hooked. So back in Christmas 2016, in episode 173 at geeks.link/173, I did my big reveal of the Wink products that I had. But a lot has changed since then, not only for me, but also for the smart world. And so I wanted to take this time today to kind of do a bit of a rundown of what I've got now, things that I might change if I were to do it all over, and some other standout notes. So as I walk through this, I'm sure Chris and SP will have all sorts of things to chime in. I encourage you to do so. You also both have some great smart products. And I'm not going to touch on all of the smart things that I have, but just sort of the stuff that kind of works mostly together. So let me kick it off here by saying that first off, Wink was how I started. I obviously just said that, but Wink is a platform. And for the audio listeners, SP is literally winking. And I hope he does that every time I say Wink, because it'll get old so quick for him. But yes, Wink is essentially an infrastructure where you have different devices that run on the standard and you can end up connecting them together. At the time when I was looking, how did I want to start? It was either Wink or SmartThings was really the way that I was looking to go. And SmartThings was still relatively unsupported. Yes, there was support, but there was not as many devices as I could find. As well, they just weren't as readily available within Canada. The other option was starting with something like Philips Hue, because I was mostly looking for bulbs at the time. But with Philips Hue, it was sort of limiting. As I started to investigate it, I was going to have to stick with most of the Philips Hue bulbs. And that was, of course, very expensive if you've ever looked that up. So I started with a Wink Hub 1, which was the first version of the Wink Hub. It's essentially a wireless device that you can end up connecting a bunch of Wink products to. And after a while, I ended up actually getting the Wink Hub 2 once that came out. And I found that that was a little bit more stable because it actually had a wired Ethernet port, something that was an obvious miss from the Hub 1. Yes, it has some other features, but that's the gist of what you need to know there. Another hub-wise that I've got in my system that I want to mention while I'm talking about hubs is the Echo Plus. For those of you who have Amazon smart devices, I'm going to encourage you to mute them right now because you can bet I'm going to say that magical keyword. So the Echo Plus, why it's considered a hub is because it actually has built into it a Zigbee controller. So you compare those Philips Hue lights to that. Philips Hue lights usually need to have a specific device that Philips Hue sells, I think it's called a bridge, in order to connect to those lights. Well, the Plus will connect directly to it. And I got that last year for Christmas, and it actually came with a bulb, and I've got another bulb since then that I'll talk about in a bit. And the last hub sort of device that I want to mention right now before I go on to some of the individual components is actually an Echo Dot. Now, while these aren't technically considered a hub because of the Alexa, see, I said I was going to say it, the Alexa app, I would consider them to be a hub for smart devices. And the reason why I say that is because it's going to allow you to bridge a bunch of Amazon Alexa compatible devices together. I'm going to keep saying the word. If you haven't muted it yet, I'm going to keep saying it because I have to for this. Because the actual technology, the app is called the Alexa technology. It's not called the Echo technology. It's called the Alexa technology. And so when you have that app together, because you have an Echo Dot, you can now bridge a whole bunch of things together. And so that's why I would call that actually a hub. and it does a lot of different things. It's quite a comprehensive app. It does a good job of pulling the programming from Wink. So if I have like a shortcut set up in Wink where I say do X and it changes a whole bunch of things, it'll pull right into that Alexa app as well. Of course, you can call it from your Echoes. It does a really good job of also allowing you to do routines, so schedules and things like that. So those are sort of the hubs that I have in my system. There's sort of another hub that I'll mention a little bit later, but we're not going to call it a hub.
Tease, tease.
As far as the original idea went for smart bulbs, I obviously started with Wink because that's where I began, was with Wink bulbs. And I've been super lucky. In Canada, since I started this journey, we've had an off-brand EcoSmart available to me. I've gone into Home Depot and they've had a whole wall of these products. Unfortunately, the last time I was in there, it looks like they're getting cleared out, but it was a good run while it lasted. And they were significantly cheaper than what was available at the time. I remember Chris and SP were talking and I'm like, it's like double what I can get up here. And you know, that was American versus Canadian pricing too. So I was pretty lucky. And what I ended up slowly replacing was all of my front porch outdoor lights. I replaced all of them with smart bulbs. I also ended up replacing other ones like my den lights, my podcast lights, as well as some lights in my living room, all with different Wink bulbs. Now, the reason I wanted to do that was, number one, with the den lights, I wanted to be able to control them by smart technology when I started to podcast, because I didn't want to have to go and, you know, shut off this light or unscrew that one to make the lighting more even. As well, my podcast lights, I have two lights that are in front of me. If you've ever seen the video side of things, right now I hold up my hands, you can probably see that they're kind of getting washed out. I wanted those to be able to be controlled so I could dim them and whatnot. And then for my front lights, I wanted to be able to control them each holiday season, we'll say. So like if it was Christmas, I can make them colored, or like Halloween, I like to make them purple and orange and things like that. So that's why I wanted to go that way with those smart bulbs. Now, I actually have a couple Philips Hue bulbs that I mentioned. The first one is the one that came with the Echo Plus. It's just a regular basic bulb. It allows you to turn it on and off. It can't even change the white color temperature from yellow to white. It's just a plain old bulb that came with it. And then the other,
fun.
I know. The other one, though, that I do have that I did end up buying myself was an individual candelabra Philips Hue bulb. And the reason I have that is because in my living room, I've got this floor lamp that in the middle has this tiny little bulb that's meant for accent. Well, of course, it's the perfect spot to have a colored accent light if you want, because it's not taking up the full room. It's just a small little light. And so last Christmas, it was on sale and I bought it for like half price or something like that. But they're expensive. They're ridiculous. So that's why I only have two of them. Now, as for the Wi-Fi options, for those of you who are familiar with smart technology, everything that I've mentioned so far basically is going to require a hub of some form. So it's the bulb talking to a technology. My Wink bulbs talk to my Wink hub. My Philips Hue talks to my Echo Plus, that sort of stuff. Well, there's actually a Wi-Fi option available. So the Wi-Fi bulbs that I've experimented with so far, I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but they leave a lot to be desired. With that said, I actually have a few of them in place because I managed to get a super cheap deal and I basically use them. If you've watched the video side of things, you know, I have a colored backdrop behind me and I've got them now on behind me so that I can smart change them without having to manually change them from blue to orange over on Better Podcasting.
Ooh, now fancy.
Here's the thing is all of these bulbs here that I've talked about, they all work relatively good. They've all been fairly stable. So I can speak highly about that. Yes, occasionally you have a glitch, but I've been able to slowly buy these things and accumulate them. I will give a couple of footnotes. I have had a couple die on me. One of those cheap EcoSmart ones I did have die on me. As well, actually, my Philips Hue one died on me after about 4 months. They were great at repairing it filing it and I don't know, whatever, replacing it, but I was without it for a couple of weeks. The other way that you can do smart technology is smart switches. Now, I obviously have put bulbs in certain places. Now, the challenge with that is if you have a whole bunch of bulbs to replace, that gets expensive very quickly. For example, my kitchen. My kitchen has two banks of lights with about five bulbs per bank. If I was to replace every single one of those, that would take me to the bank. Ha ha! See what I did there?
I see what you did there.
You spent all weekend writing that one, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So in order to overcome that, what you can do is get an actual smart switch. So you're basically replacing your light switch with a smart switch. So it's just controlling that switch and thus the lights behind the switch. And that's what I actually ended up having to do in a couple of places. Now, one of the places that I've done this with the smart switch is my outdoor lights. So even though I have a couple of smart bulbs on my porch lights, I wanted to be able to also just turn all of those outdoor lights on and off easily using a regular switch. If you're on your way out the door, you don't have to pull out the app or you don't want to have an Alexa sitting there. So I wanted to make sure that someone could just use the switch regularly as they're on their way out the door. So I have a smart switch there, a Wink one. And then in my kitchen, what I replaced it with was, for those two banks of lights, I replaced it with what's called a Wink relay, which is basically a set of two smart switches, but with a smart panel on that. When I did this originally, it was actually cheaper than using two smart switches. The price of one Wink relay was cheaper than two smart switches. So obviously that was the way it was going to go. Plus it had a panel for the Wink control. Now, the other way that you can get smart switches are inline switches. Inline switches are basically a device that will go in line between your outlet as well as the device. So I have a few of these. I have a Wink, a level 10 Wink one. I have a first generation Wemo that I managed to score a wicked deal for like $4 a piece or something. I have a few of those. And also last year when I was short some during Christmas, I ended up getting this TP-Link Kazza one or something like that. So they all work basically the same. They just fall in line between a power outlet and the device that you want to hook up. Now, the other couple smart devices that I have before I talk about some of the uses and some of the tips that I would have for someone looking to start getting into smart stuff. The first thing that I'll mention that I have is, of course, a Logitech Harmony Hub. Now, the reason I didn't put this in the hub section is because while it is a hub, it's more of just a control for your TV. It does other stuff, but when you're hooking it into something like Alexa and an existing infrastructure, you're not really using those hub features per se. You're more so just using it to change your channels. And those do work with the Alexa devices. It's a great, great addition to anybody who has an Amazon Echo and is thinking that they'd like to be able to control their TV. It works super well. And yes, there are problems occasionally, but overall, one of my most valuable additions that I've got in my smart setup. The other thing that I've got is my irrigation timer, which does, again, connect to my Alexa Hub. Can you see now why I'm suggesting that you start by getting an Amazon Echo Dot? Because it all works so well together.
Well, Echo Plus.
Or an Echo Plus, if you really want to get an Echo Plus too. You could do that.
If you need the hub capabilities of it,
yes,
for some of your stuff, that's ideal.
That's a good point. Very good point.
Or a show.
Or you could get a show. Or is that just you want me to give you a show, SB?
Give us a show, Steven.
I would like an Amazon show.
Okay, Steven. Okay, sorry. I'll put my shirt back on. So what are some of the uses that I've got for my smart things? Well, first off, from a day-to-day activity perspective, I use it all the time to turn on different things, turn off different things. Like if I'm leaving the kitchen and I got a bowl full of popcorn or a couple of things, I can tell it to turn off my lights behind it. Go ahead and I just say, Alexa, turn off the kitchen lights. Or, you know, maybe I'm going out back to grill and it's dark and I've got a plate of meat in my hands. I said a plate of meat, SP. Don't take your mind that place. I know you did. I can go ahead and tell it to turn on my light so that I'm ready to go when I head out to the barbecue. A way that I actually use this every day, though, is with some path lights that I have in my yard. In my backyard, I have low voltage lights, as many people do if you're constantly going out back. A lot of people put those like sidewalk lights in. I've got sidewalk lights and a couple ambient lights to go on my trees. And I ended up this past summer switching those out from a dumb timer to a smart timer. And that works really well for those sort of purposes, because those of you who live in this part of the world might know that recently it started to get dark quicker. That's the thing that happens every year. And
what? So that's blasphemy. When would that ever happen?
So what I was able to do was just go in and say, turn on the pathway lights 30 minutes before sunset. And I was able to program that through Wink. So every day it was coming on a little bit earlier. And it just meant that I didn't have this weird phase where they were on for like 2 hours before sunset, or where it was off until 2 hours after sunset. So really, really, really good use of the smart technology this year for that. The other thing as well is, I've mentioned it before, I've got a rental suite. My in-laws rent the suite. And so sometimes they do head out in the backyard. So I shared through Wink. With Wink, you're able to share a device with another account. And so I shared with my in-laws the ability to turn on and off those pathway lights. So if they're out, when they're off, they can go ahead and turn those on manually. So the shareability is a really good attribute to the Wink system. Now, I mentioned it, I use them for podcasting, makes it easier to set color temperature and all that stuff. I was really happy to recently add the colored ones behind me. Again, I got those for super cheap. But just overall, the ability to automatically have my overhead lights go off that I want, and if I want it a little brighter for one show than another, I can do that as well. Now, one of the most recent uses that I actually fell into for smart technology is an example I wanted to share, because while it's unique to me, it's just an example on how you never know where you're going to work in this smart technology. And that was when I ended up a couple months ago getting a security camera system, and I got it for super dirt cheap, and it's off brand. And when I went to go away, I was worried that off brand things were going to be off brand, maybe freeze up. So I put a smart timer on the actual DVR for that security camera so that if I was away and it froze up, I could toggle the power and reboot it remotely. The other thing as well is, I don't trust security cameras being on 24/7 if they're in your backyard. I think the one that Chris has, he mentioned on a while ago, it's on his front yard. Solid. I got no problems with that. But in my backyard, where there's an expectation to have some privacy, I don't want those connected to the internet all the time. So I actually put a network switch. So basically, a network switch is like a device that splits an internet connection. So I put a network switch in line between my DVR and my router. And then I ended up putting that, because I had it kicking around, I put that on a switch, or a Wink switch. So what I could do is toggle the power on that network switch, essentially disconnecting it and reconnecting it to the network remotely. So I was able to overcome that problem. So it's not connected to the internet most of the time, but if I ever want to connect and see something, I can. So it was, again, just something I wanted to share that's unique to me, but I thought a really good use of how you never know where you're going to be able to use this technology. And then, of course, the other thing as well that I'll mention is, when you're on vacation, it's a lot better as far as making it look like your home. I know, Chris, you've talked about the home sitter aspect of Wink before. That's something that it just makes it look a lot more random, more like somebody's home. And then finally, of course, the biggest time that I shine with all of this technology is Christmas, because I got a lot of different Christmas lights and I like to smart control them all.
He does have a lot of Christmas lights. He showed us.
You can see it from space.
Yeah. That's true. He puts Tim the Toolman Taylor to shame.
Yeah. I've heard that I actually have made my entire block without power. That's what I've been told. Not sure if that's true.
More power.
So in closing, what are some of my thoughts on this? What would I do different if I was starting now? What are my top recommendations? Well, first off, let me say it's way more affordable now to get into it than when I started. When I started, I luckily had some gift cards that I had around, and I specifically at the time wanted to use those gift cards for something for the home, but something that wasn't traditional for the home. That was the way that we had decided to allocate these gift cards. We didn't want them just going to a day-to-day thing. They were there for fun, and so this was a great fit for that. But if I was to get into it now, I could definitely afford to do it on a slow basis, because there's a lot more affordable products. 2 years ago, if it wasn't for those gift cards, never would have got into it. Now, the reason why it's more affordable is because with things like the Google Home and the Amazon Alexa, because you have these hubs available there is a lot of Wi-Fi products that will work into those hubs. And so there's a lot of brands available fighting for your dollar, and it's come down a lot in price to get into these smart devices. So with that said, thinking of everything that I want to do with my smart stuff, I would still get into Wink because the Wink infrastructure is still a little bit better than the way that the Amazon Alexa infrastructure is. For example, they have robots, is what they call them with Wink, where if something happens, you can do something else. So like if a light comes on, I can make it turn off another light. Not with Alexa yet. As well, the sharing ability of Wink is something that I yearn for the day that Alexa can do that, because being able to share a device with another account is really, really important, I think, for a smart perspective. And especially when you're thinking about the fact that a lot of times there's multiple people within the house. And like SP, I know you talked about when you had a couple of different Echo Dots, everybody tried to have their own account. So you would probably want to share some of those devices. Now, with that said, as I was building things, I would look at, do I need the Wink feature for this device? For example, my pathway lights that I mentioned. Yes, I need those Wink features. I need to be able to share those. I want to be able to have them slowly work back X minutes amount of minutes before sunset. My security camera toggle, on the other hand, that's just for me. That could be a Wi-Fi switch. So I would look at every aspect and think, do I need the Wink features, or could I get away with the Alexa ones? Because the Alexa ones, or if you have a Google Home, the Google Home ones are far cheaper. Although I will say the Google Home app, not so hot. Not so hot. We'll just leave that at that. The other thing is from the kitchen lights that I mentioned, Wink Relay, get rid of that. I don't need that anymore. There's a lot of good Wi-Fi switches available that are a lot less. And also the Wink Relay, it's starting to get long in the tooth. Definitely runs a lot slower. It only controls the Wink products. And honestly, it overheats occasionally.
This is not isolated to a smart hub or a smart switch. This is a general issue with smart devices in your home. Say you get that brand new refrigerator from Samsung and you connect it to your internet. What's the lifespan of that? 2, 3, maybe 4 years? And what's the lifespan of a normal refrigerator? Like 10 years? I mean, I think Dad.io did an episode on this earlier in the year, like in June timeframe. So are you really expecting to use this hub for longer than 2 years? I think that's a good time frame to expect to use any of the smart stuff.
No, that's a really good point. The next thing that I've got here as well is I would, if I was investing in this now, I would plan on replacing things with smart products as things died. So if I have a CFL bulb die, I would go and replace that, spending a few dollars more. It's really not incredibly more versus a regular LED. There's some really affordable products now. I would just slowly start replacing those because then you have more control. So that's the way I would do it. And that's kind of how I've done my setup over the last couple of years, is slowly replace things here and there as I could afford the extra few bucks here and there and whatnot versus buying a new bulb. It worked out in the long run. The other thing that I would do is I would suggest that you create an isolated network from the beginning. And this hasn't burned me personally, but we've read articles before. There was a couple years ago where there was a big internet attack because all of these smart things, many of them, were hacked. And if you're buying off-brand things, I'm going to say your probability of them being compromised is probably higher. So I think it's a really good practice to create an isolated network for your Wi-Fi devices, for your smart devices, from the beginning. A lot of routers have a guest network that will work for most people's application. So that might be a good way to go, where it is isolated. I've done that now, but I'm fighting with having to probably go and change my main Wi-Fi password because things keep remembering it, even though I forgot it. But I think it's a really good practice to take your smart devices and put them on their own isolated network. I know, Chris, you're hoping to do that yourself.
That's the plan right now. And I think the simplest thing we're going to do is probably spin up a guest network that's permanently up, that's just going to have all my Internet of Things devices on it, because I don't want to just hang an old router off the back of my other router and be running two networks and have that much more interference in my house, because there's enough as it is.
The other thing that I would suggest doing as far as light bulbs go is don't expect much from the cheap ones, because this has been my experience with my Wi-Fi generic smart bulbs that I've seen, and I've read a few reviews like this. They're not very bright. They're great for behind me here, but compared to my Wink bulbs, they're not very good. And I think probably the reason why is because they're just cheaping out trying to get bulbs in people's hands. But if I was to try to use one of these smart bulbs that I've gotten, I'm only talking about the couple that I've tried, in a regular light, it would be kind of dark. It's not acceptable to me. So expect that with the cheaper bulbs. And finally, the last thing that I've got is make sure to take full advantage of cataloging your items, because if you have to make a shuffle and whatnot, it's good to know exactly what it's called in your app. Like if you have a few different smart switches around and you want to make sure like you need to diagnose something or it resets and for some reason you have to reprogram it, it's great just to be able to go over, look at the device and go, oh, okay, yeah, this one is called downstairs Christmas tree, or this one's called backyard Christmas tree, or this one's called hallway Christmas tree, whatever Christmas tree it is, because we all know we all have 1,000 Christmas trees, right?
Of course, I have multiple.
But seriously, it's a good idea to label them, and if you can, catalog it somewhere. That's what I do. I have a spreadsheet of all of these. So if I'm looking to try to, from a geek perspective, look at networking information for those Wi-Fi devices, I have written down what their MAC addresses are, as well as I set a static IP so that I've got that all readily available. So definitely use technology to catalog your technology. Now, the only last caution I have is to say that these Wi-Fi devices, this explosion is so new. What's going to happen? What happens when all of a sudden this... Linganzh, when that company goes under that I've got of this Wi-Fi bulb, well, because they will go under, will their stuff still talk to Alexa? Will they not?
If you're lucky.
Right? So that's why I would be cautious of taking off-brand devices unless you're willing to part with them if all of a sudden they go over. But that could happen with any of this stuff. Wink was just acquired by, who were they acquired by? One of the Black Eyed Peas people, I think?
Will I Am.
Yeah, Will I Am. So you don't know. It could happen with any of them. So there is something to be said about diversifying your portfolio. But that's sort of where I'm at with my smart stuff. So I wanted to take this opportunity to do this recap of sort of where I am, where I've accumulated slowly to. And again, most of this has just been here and there, like the Christmas tree explosion that not literal explosion, but the explosion of smart switches that I got. I needed to buy a replacement switch. I dug out my timers that I was using for my Christmas displays and they were dead. So it wasn't that much more money for me to buy a couple of smart switches. I had to do it anyways. Chris and SP, do you have any final thoughts on this smart thing other than telling me I need help?
I'm glad that I started you on this path and that you are far worse addicted than me, because now I can learn what worked and didn't work from you and save myself a little coin.
I've been a little bit slower, a little bit more cautious in developing my own home networks and mainly taking stuff that already existed and try to link it together. So I guess it's kind of like you starting slow, but I have not embraced getting hubs, getting bulbs, getting stuff, and I have literally been replacing stuff as it comes along for the replacement, if it breaks or whatever. I have not ventured into the smart appliances. I have bought 2 major appliances this year, and I have not made sure that they were smart. Now, my HVAC system, it kind of worries me a little bit. However, the controller is a separate piece and I can buy a new one, an updated one, and I can keep the air conditioner and the furnace separate. That's mechanical, and the controller I can update. So there is a little difference. Whereas like a dishwasher or a washing machine, a stove or refrigerator, you can't just buy a new control panel for those.
Yeah. And I think though, if you are looking at doing this, definitely help on Amazon. I'm going to encourage people to do that, because I really think that if you're starting now, a good place to go to start is with an Amazon Echo Dot, if that's all you can afford to start. Wait for a sale on that, because the Dot will at least give you that Alexa app and that integration. And from there, you're going to be able to find a lot more affordable products. Definitely, I'm jealous of how things are right now. And there's definitely a little bit of money I could have saved had I started now. If you got any questions about any of this, or you want to get in touch with us, or you have ideas on how I'm just doing it all wrong, let us know. Get in touch with us through any of the ways. You can go ahead and find us at GunnaGeek.com. You can tweet us at GunnaGeek. Head on over to Facebook.com/GunnaGeek. Or if you really want, send us an email to show@GunnaGeek.com. But that is going to take us to the end of the show. Before we wrap up, take a moment here to plug and promote and do whatever we'd like to do. Let's start off with Chris Farrell this time. Chris Farrell, what would you like to grumble about?
To grumble about? I'm not sure I really have much to grumble about, but I do like to remind folks that, as Steven mentioned, we are part of the Gunna Geek Network. There's a ton of stuff there. We do stream live on Geeks.live, this show every Monday, but there are a bunch of other shows that stream live on Geeks.live. So if you're there right now, scroll down the page a little bit. You'll see a calendar. Come check out one of the other awesome live shows we have on the network. You're going to have a blast.
Awesome. Stargate Pioneer, is there anything that you would like to plug or promote or grumble about?
I will promote and grumble the fact that the Starling Tribune this week will start its coverage of Arrow Season 7.
Woohoo!
And the jury is out right now on how good or bad that season is going to be. Usually the season premiere is pretty good. So I am looking forward to seeing that episode, which was airing as we were recording. And then we will be recording that in a couple of days here on Thursday. And then that should be out over the weekend. Also, we have just started the Punisher series on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. So if you like the Netflix Defenders series, you can check that out at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And I'm just going to go ahead and say RIP Iron Fist for now. For those of you that didn't hear, it was canceled from Netflix. To me, it screams of moving to Disney, but that's my conspiracy theory on that.
The character still be around.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's around, if he's wrong or not. We will see in 1 year.
Why would Disney take a failing property to launch their streaming service
in
with?
1 year. Well, no, I don't think. Okay. It's a bigger discussion than just moving a series, because I don't think the series is moving. I think Disney's investment in the Netflix platform itself is what is waning.
I think that there's contracts involved, and if there's going to be negotiations and Netflix is going to be willing to give up one, it's going to be Iron Fist. That's my conspiracy theory. But that is going to take us to the end of the show. So for episode number 259 of the official GunnaGeek.com show, I'm Stephen John Drew saying thanks for checking out the show. And if you like us, please give us a 5-star review wherever you can find us.
MSP saying, if you need your faucet fixed, go call a plumber.
And I'm Chris Farrell saying, if you don't like us, give us a 5-star review also, because we like those.
Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. If you like the show, please give us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts or a thumbs up on YouTube. You can always join us for our live recording sessions, which stream Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live. And remember, you can find our full back catalog at gunnageek.com/show. If you're itching for more geeky content, check out other shows on gunnageeknetwork.com. Voice work was by Emily Prokop of the Story Behind podcast. That's it for this episode. We hope to see you back again next week.